Remaker's Mark, Episode 24, Supergirl. Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here in Episode 24, we are discussing Supergirl. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing tonight? And what was your favorite superhero or comic book?
I am very well, thank you. And I only had one comic book growing up, and it happened to be Iron Man, so Iron Man.
Nice. By default, I like it. Jeremy Nielsen, how are you doing tonight, and what is your favorite superhero slash comic book?
I'm doing quite well also, and the first comic book that I ever picked up was the Fantastic Four with the Silver Surfer introduction, and fell in love with the Fantastic Four.
Nice. Good one. I never read Fantastic Four. I'm sad to say that. Lee High-Pitched Squeal, how are you doing tonight, and what was your favorite superhero or comic book?
I'm doing well, and I didn't really read any comic books growing up, but my favorite superhero was and always has been Superman.
Nice.
It's hard to go wrong with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And Mark Josting, how are you tonight, and what is your favorite superhero or comic book?
I'm great, thanks, now that my daughter is asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a collector of a number of different comic book titles as a teen, but I've always been a big fan of Thor.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Good choice.
Thank you.
My name is Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host again this evening, and I really didn't read a lot of comic books. I guess the one that I read the most growing up was Transformers. So I think 2 weeks in a row now, my answer has been Transformers for favorite cartoon and favorite comic books. So. And yet I still haven't seen the most recent movie and probably shouldn't be surprised by that.
Yeah, that's because you're a fan.
Yeah.
Exactly, because I'm an actual fan of Transformers, yes.
I'm not going to see it either.
Sigh. Yeah, ditto. Agreed. Oh, well, what can you do? So, before we move on to our discussion of Supergirl, I want to thank our friends at Modern Antics for their promotional consideration.
Modern Antics produces and markets hugely interesting events in bars and other cool places. New from Modern Antics, Riddle Room. Riddle Room is a live puzzle game unlike anything you've ever experienced. 12 people are locked in the bunker, and they have 1 hour to solve a series of increasingly difficult challenges before the clock runs out. Interested in other Modern Antics events? Check them out at modernantics.com or on Facebook and Twitter at Modern Antics.
All right, thanks again to Modern Antics. Now let's give a quick summary and talk about our history with the film. Andy, do you want to tackle that?
I do. Supergirl is a 1984 superhero, in air quotes, film, directed by Jeannot Swark. I'm going to apologize to Mr. Swark, who has made most of his, I think, career directing television episodes, but was also responsible for such gems as Somewhere in Time and Jaws 2. Hmm. The film tells the story of Kara Zor-El, who happens to be Superman's cousin, and her quest to retrieve from Earth the Omega Hedron, a power source about the size of a baseball, needed to keep her home city alive. The power source is captured by Selina, an amateur witch with dreams of world conquest. Hijinks naturally ensue.
Good summary.
Thank you. I will try to temper my distaste for this film throughout the episode, but I happened to just see the movie finally last night, and the foul, bitter taste is still in my mouth.
You made it through. That's good.
Yeah, Andy was texting me as he was watching it, spewing all sorts of diatribes about the film.
It's a tough one to swallow.
It was a tough one to swallow. But Lee, you seem to have developed a taste for this movie, so tell us your history.
Well, I mean, I did see it when I was 10. I didn't see it in the theater, but when it came out on video, I watched it immediately just because of my love of the Superman franchise and loved it. And then saw it a few years later when I was a little older and realized how terrible it was. And then rewatched it again recently and really saw how terrible it was. but I'm still in love with Helen Slater.
And Lee, I'm glad, I really am truly glad that you had at least a period of time when this movie was very special to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a period of about 2 years.
That's two more years than I think any of the rest of us had.
Yes.
So. It's two. That's true.
Mark, you had mentioned a history that you have with the comic book.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, like Lee, I started out with in the Supergirl story by watching this movie when I was a kid. And, yeah, I also just didn't know any better. So at the time, my response was like, yeah, Supergirl is cool. And... And Supergirl is cool. It just turns out that the rest of the movie is not. I think I've always been a big comic book fan, and the Supergirl stories, especially after the movie came out, are actually really, really good. And anybody that wants something that's easier to digest, the all the Warner Brothers animation stuff based off of DC Comics does a really they do really good versions of Supergirl.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I think we're going to touch on that a little bit in our part two discussion. So a bit of foreshadowing there. Insert foreshadowing music here. Excellent.
So yeah, Andy, that's where I came from, is actually having really good experiences with Supergirl.
Well, I think it's important that you bring up that the Supergirl movie is a small slice, in a putrid, rotten slice, of the much larger and more enjoyable Supergirl universe.
Yeah, and I think the good folks at DC Comics recognized their mistake and wanted to do her more justice.
I think they can blame the cell kinds.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We'll get to that too.
Yep,
indeed.
Jared, Kyle, any confessions?
No, this is the first time seeing it for me. This is interesting. This is the first time that we've ever done a movie on Remaker's Mark that we don't love and was sort of chosen for that explicit purpose. One, because it's a superhero movie, we hadn't done that, so that came into the discussion. Second was that it's something that, you know, all the movies we've talked about so far are ones that we've really enjoyed, and now we're doing something that we get a chance to really tear into in terms of improving it. So it's not going to be haters club here. I think there'll be a little bit of like, oh, how I wish they had done that differently, and here's how we would do it differently. So that's a nice little change of pace here from the Remaker's Mark side of things.
This is, in other words, you're saying this will be good for us.
Yes, totally. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. As they all are, I hope. Nice. All right. Well, that does it for our summary and history. Now let's move on to the recasting. So as usual, in part one of our discussion of the movie, we will be recasting the roles. We'll be doing three major roles and five minor roles. First up in the major roles is that of Ethan. Mark, tell us about Ethan and then let us know who you cast for that role.
Okie dokie. Ethan is a major character for some reason. He's a landscaper or a gardener or something. Maybe he's in lawn care. I don't know. Selina casts a love spell on him because he's kind of good looking, I guess. Supergirl eventually falls for him also because he's kind of good looking, I guess. And that's about all that he does in the film.
So, where's the wand?
It dropped dead.
Where at exactly? Out back?
You know, I thought we might get to know each other a little more before we dig in and talk real turkey.
Well, see, I'm kind of a private person, you know? I mean, I do my work, I go home.
To your wife?
No, at the present moment in time, I'm currently enjoying a single status in my personal life.
Cheers.
Bottoms up, huh?
Bottoms up.
Yeah, if had I my druthers, this role wouldn't even exist. I think in our remake there would be no Ethan, and there would just be the benefit of having no Ethan.
yeah,
agreed.
Yeah.
Are you casting no Ethan? Is that your choice?
No,
I honestly think that's the best choice, and I would vote for it.
That is a noble endeavor for sure.
Yeah. Well, I felt. Obligated to actually put a human in this role since the original had one. And so I guess my first criterion was Beefcake. And and my second one was, you know, have more depth than the original portrayal did. And so I cast Taylor Kitsch.
Nice.
Yeah.
Of Friday Night Lights fame, right?
Indeed. And I actually really like his portrayal of Gambit in the Wolverine Origins movie. I know a lot of people didn't like that film, but I actually quite enjoyed it. And but I've always been a big fan of the character Gambit.
You see that Channing Tatum is going to be portraying him, supposedly, going forward?
That's too bad. I react negatively to that.
Interesting.
I like Taylor Kitsch's portrayal.
I like the idea that Gambit's going to be around. I don't like the idea of Channing Tatum.
Yeah. Yep. I like Channing Tatum a lot too, but I agree.
Yeah,
I think that's a good pick, Mark. It's weird. I don't see him as a beefcake. I mean, he's like a fairly ripped dude, but beefcake to me implies lacking intelligence often, and I don't see that with him. I think he's got quite a bit going on behind those eyes. Beautiful eyes.
He's groundskeeper ripped.
Yeah, that's true. He's toned.
Yeah, that'll do. That's very appropriate, even. I don't have that connotation of. Of trading muscle for intelligence. So, I don't think he needs to be stupid necessarily. He just needs to be beefy.
Add groundskeeper ripped to our list along with 80s handsome.
Yes,
80s handsome and groundskeeper ripped.
And what was it? Sponsor comedies.
Yes, sponsor comedies.
There we go.
Oh, he was John Carter. Okay, now I'm.
Yes, he was John Carter as well.
I'm putting the pieces together. Gotcha.
I still never saw that. I need to do so. I heard it wasn't terrible, but it did really poorly in the box office compared to the amount of money that they threw at it. So kind of avoided it, but I'd like to see it. Any of you guys see it? No.
Yeah,
there we go.
I avoided it specifically on the grounds that it's named after the main character. And I hate that trend in movies. It's funny. Unless Fair it's enough. The name of a superhero.
Yeah. Or like King Kong.
Yeah.
Do you know what else did really poorly compared to the money that they put into it?
What's that?
Supergirl.
Fair enough. He's custom made for the role then.
All right. Yeah. So that's my pick, Taylor Kitsch. And let's hear from Andy now.
I went in a much shallower vein for this movie because and this is a little bit of me being so frustrated with the movie, but this movie is entirely pointless and simply visual and offers absolutely nothing to the movie. So my criteria for this
I can't wait for Andy's picks for this whole thing.
I chose Alex Pettifer. I think that's how you say his name. I'll pause while you all look up his picture on IMDb. I'll give you two reasons why I chose Alex Pettifer. One is just his picture on his IMDb page because he's a beautiful
chiseled
man. Two, he was in Magic Mike. In my opinion, he's overqualified for this role.
He was the kid in Magic Mike, right?
Still, he's in Magic Mike.
So, yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm just clarifying. He was like the kid that Channing Tatum befriended.
Yes.
Okay.
He's a beautiful man, and really that's all this role needs. He actually looks a little bit younger than whoever the original actor was, Hart. First of all, the original actor's name was Hart. Come on.
Boom.
I think we'll get to this in the second part, but some of the romantic relationships in this movie were creepy. Like, I would guess a guy in his mid to late 20s macking on some high school girl. Come on.
Some high school superhero.
And getting macked on by a late 30s-ish witch.
Late 30s? Really? Yep. You think that young?
Yeah. I'd say 40s, late 40s.
I was going to say older. Alex Pettifer is my choice.
I like him.
I think he'll do a great job.
I call him groundskeeper ripped.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, totally.
Like I said, overqualified. Lee, who you got for Ethan?
Well, like Mark, I wanted someone to bring a little bit more personality to this role and not be such a mimbo.
Don't mess with genius, Lee.
I think I would probably remove this character as well, but if I'm casting him, I'm going with Sam Claflin, who was in the most recent Hunger Games movies as Finnick. I think he could.
Oh, I like him.
Yeah.
He was really good.
I think he could bring a little bit more personality to a role like this, and I know that he's got really good range.
And good pecs.
Yes, and he is groundskeeper ripped, just like the rest.
Every time we say that, all I can think of is Bill Murray in Caddyshack.
I just picture groundskeeper Willie like flexing his shirt off.
Grease me up, woman.
His kilt blowing in the wind.
Lunch lady Doris, have you got any grease?
Yes, I do.
Lord. Yeah, I really liked him in Hunger Games. That's a good pick. That's a good one.
Yeah, I thought he was good for this one, but... Jer, you're up next.
is fun.
Ethan's dopey. And Ethan's also groundskeeper ripped. And that's basically the two criteria I was looking for, is somebody that looked good, but also kind of you knew there was not a lot going on there. And he essentially was our damsel in distress the entire movie.
That's a good description.
So I went with somebody. I'm going to give you their entire filmography right now. he began his career playing Jock Kid Game Number 3 and the Benchwarmers. Then he played Glenn in Stuck in Love, Frat Boy Cooper in Grown Ups 2, and soon to be Bud in Dear Eleanor and Jeff in Scouts vs. Zombies. I'm talking none other than the son of Arnold Schwarzenegger, Patrick Schwarzenegger.
No way.
Boom.
Wow. Well, with that pedigree, how could you go wrong?
Don't look at his IMDb page because he looks too smart. Go down about 6 pictures to a red carpet picture where he's actually smiling, and you'll see what I mean.
I do see what you mean.
Yep. Got it.
He looks a little high.
perfect. He looks like an Ethan.
He does look like an Ethan.
For reference, the guy who played Ethan originally, Hart Bochner, was, if you've seen Die Hard, which I hope you have, he's the guy that tries to negotiate with Hans Gruber. Like, he's kind of the slimy guy.
Hans Bubby.
Yeah, that guy. That's Hart Bochner. Yeah, I hope you watch Supergirl, only because then you can participate with us more readily here. But if you do not, we understand, and that will hopefully help guide who that is for you, or help you understand who that is. So, yep, good one. I like it. Patrick Schwarzenegger.
I was so excited to stumble upon Patrick Schwarzenegger today. that leaves Kyle. Go for it.
All right. So I had a really hard time picking this one just because there was pretty much very little to latch onto in terms of characters. So then I was like, you know, who would I like to see in a movie that I haven't seen in a while? And the other day, a person that I follow on Twitter and who I listen to podcasts of, Merlin Mann, he's been many, many things on the internet, but he's a really, really funny guy. Hilarious. He was, I think, watching the Harry Potter movies with his daughter. And he had one tweet that simply said, "Neville effing Longbottom." And I went, you know,
oh, yeah,
we haven't seen much of Neville since Harry Potter went out. So I'm casting Matthew Lewis, who played Neville Longbottom in the Harry Potter movies, because I want to see more of Matthew Lewis.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know why. And somehow between like movies 5 and 7, Neville became like super hot. He became the one where people are like, whoa, hey, what up? What happened? Hey, Neville, what's going on? So I think he's handsome, but I think he's approachable. I think he's kind of sweet. So you could see him, you know, kind of romancing Supergirl, not being a total creep, but I think he could be a groundskeeper ripped too. So yeah. Matthew Lewis, AKA Neville Longbottom.
And you know, in the Harry Potter films, they always put like some dental apparatus on him and make him a little bit more buck-toothed, and they always made him look a little bit funnier than he should and than he naturally does. And he's a good looking guy.
He is. He's a very good looking guy. Yeah. Yep. Yep. So I was pretty excited about that. I was like, yep, I'm bringing Neville back.
Yeah.
I applaud that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So in the role of Ethan, originally played by Hart Bochner, Mark chose Taylor Kitsch, Andy chose Alex Pettifer, Lee chose Sam Kleifen, Jer chose Patrick Schwarzenegger, and I chose Matthew Lewis. Up next is the role of Selena. So Jer, tell us about Selena.
Selena, not the teenage witch. Selena is a witch wannabe who stumbles upon the Omegahedron like you do, and uses it first.
As you do.
First, she uses it to ensnare the local college groundskeeper, like you do, and then as an afterthought decides to terrorize the locals. She lives in an old abandoned carnival, so you know she's a supervillain.
That's a great description.
Naming of names is not necessary. Just concentrate on her face, and my shadow will do the rest. You what? Power of shadow, take shape. Look like a vicious dark star. Seek out that wretched young creature and destroy her wherever she are. Oh, God, that's awful. That's never going to work.
Oh, man.
And who played her originally?
originally played by Faye Dunaway. classically trained Faye Dunaway, who ate scenery like Willem Dafoe.
It's so true.
She had to cry herself to sleep in her trailer every night in this movie.
Oh,
poor Faye. And easily the weirdest lighting I've ever seen on a character.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yes! Like three-fourths of the movie, the light was focused from just above her eyebrows to the middle of her nose.
It was like they got a discount super version weird of the Marilyn Monroe focus.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Yes, indeed. So weird.
So I wanted somebody that would be equally as screen stealing, but I wanted an actual legit villain that was actually going to bring some personality and entertainment to it, but could still play a witch. So I went with Helena Bonham Carter.
Ooh, nice.
Oh man.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. She chews like few do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think she would bring the same sort of Faye Dunaway-ish characteristics, but actually making it interesting and not just what is going on.
Yeah, she kind of drives me nuts. I like where she's been as an actress. I'm just kind of ready for her to be done doing what she's doing.
Yeah.
But I think she is really good for this role. I think that's a good fit for her, so I'll overlook that.
It's low-hanging fruit. It's slow pitch, but it's Supergirl, so I feel like it's a fairly tailor-made character for her.
Yep.
I've been a fan of hers ever since Fight Club.
Yeah, ditto. Yeah, I wish she would do more stuff like that. Like, that was a really interesting character, a really interesting portrayal. So,
I liked her as the innkeeper's wife, I suppose, in Les Mis. I thought that was a really fun role that she sort of created out of nothing.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. She's a little bit, I don't want to say typecast. Like, she has a limited range of roles that she does really super well, if that makes sense. And this is it. And this
is right in that wheelhouse.
Exactly.
Yep.
I'm going to say that she does anything well, but
I would agree. Let me amend my statement. I think the roles in which she maybe is now being picked for or offered recently have all been, I think, variations on a theme. But again, she does them so well. So
maybe if Tim Burton directs this remake, then I'll be all in.
Now we're getting interesting.
Yeah, that's true, actually. That's a good comparison. I feel like she got Bellatrix Lestrange hair, and then she's like, yes, that's going to be my whole self from now
this
on.
This is me for
and
the next decade.
And she's
kind of
stuck in there. Yeah, yeah. I'm ready for her to escape Bellatrix. Maybe there's some serious magic going on there.
But that is my pick, and I hand it off to Kyle.
All right. Yeah, I wanted somebody that was, you know, a little menacing. I wanted somebody that was influential, that you could believe had just someone like a hanger on, like she kind of has this helper lady and you don't really know why. We'll talk about her in a little bit, but you know, somebody that is powerful but approachable, I guess. So it's a lot to balance. And the person that came to mind who I wanted for, like, very strong eyes, very strong face, the first person that came to mind was Rachel Weisz. I think I picked her before. Ooh. I can't remember what for, but I think she can be very strong, but I think she can be very approachable and very light too. Totally. And I think this character kind of needs to go that whole gamut. And I think Faye Dunaway did it in such a big way that you didn't believe sort of the more human aspect of it, and you hated the really dramatic part of it. So I want you to believe the human part more and then be really genuinely freaked out when she is witchy Selena. So I thought she could hit both of those really, really well as one performer. So Rachel Weisz is who I went with. Plus, I just adore her. I think she's awesome.
Yeah, she equals wow.
Yeah, yep. Mark, how about you? Who did you pick for Selena?
Well, I was sort of half of what I was looking for, about like half of what you were looking for, Kyle, where I wanted to get like the super witchy part, but I want my Selena to be basically a total badass, and I want her to be like all cold and ambitious and none of the goofy bumbling that was in the Faye Dunaway portrayal. Yeah, so I wanted someone that that could be that wicked and that tough, but also beautiful and elegant too. And so I only thought of one name for this role, and that was Lena Headey.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful good descriptor. Yep.
Yes.
I've watched a metric ton of Game of Thrones in the last 9 months or so, and we're actually caught up now. Jerry, we have to talk about that, by the way. I want to know where you're at with that, but they'll take that offline. Mm-hmm. And I don't love her. So she portrays one of the main characters and probably the most prevalent female character in the show. There's many, but I would say probably that's the case. And she's very evil and very mean and very, she kind of has one face and it's variations on that face. And so I'm a little bit sick of her, but I think the way you describe it, I just don't know how she's been directed in this. And I think she can be more diverse than how she portrays in Game of Thrones. So I think it's a good pick. I'm just a little Lena Headey weary at the moment, but I don't think that's a reflection on your choice. Yeah. At all. That's just kind of where I'm at.
And from my experience, I don't have HBO, so I haven't seen any Game of Thrones.
Neither have I.
But, you know, I've watched her in 300 and in Dread, and she's amazing in both of them, and the difference between those two roles is incredible. And then actually just earlier today I watched a film called The Mortal Instruments, City of Bones.
And,
and she honestly is, her character is comatose for most of the movie, but but where she's
she sold the hell out of
where
it.
She's conscious, you know, she's, you know, upright and good and a loving mother and actually a demon hunter who can kick ass too.
Cool.
And yeah, so like I have the experience of her having this huge range and being totally convincing every time and also kicking ass every time. So that's where I want to be.
Nice.
I know her best from the short-lived Terminator series that was on TV a few years ago.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Sarah Connor.
Yeah, she had a lot better range there. That's a good call.
Yeah, and she was wonderful in that. I was bummed that kind of went off the rails and eventually off the air.
Yeah. Yep, good reference. I kind of forgot about that.
Maybe I'll have to watch that one too. Yeah, so Lena Headey is my pick for Selena. Speaking of off the rails, Lee.
Nice.
That's me. Well, Selena, this is another character I would remove because I was bored to death of her. But we can get into that in part two. But in the spirit of recasting, I wanted to find someone that had a better presence. Nothing against Faye Dunaway. I think she's great. I think she did the absolute best she could with what was on the page, which wasn't much, but I was not frightened of her for one second. So I wanted someone with a little bit more menacing presence, and I went with Cate Blanchett.
Oh,
nice. Man.
She was my number two.
That's some serious gravitas right there.
She was also my number two.
Yeah, she's got the range, definitely, and she plays a really good villain.
Yeah, oh, totally. So. I picture the scene from, I think it was Fellowship of the Ring, where Frodo offers her the ring, and she kind of like, she says, I wouldn't be a terrifying leader. I would be a great leader. Like, I can't remember the words, which I'm ashamed of, but you know, she just grows and everything goes dark and light at the same time. And you know, everything's just terrifying and weirdly blue. And that's pretty much like what Selena should be.
Yeah. We're all would love her and despair.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Oh, God, what a great line.
I essentially only didn't pick her because I think I picked her recently. And I was like, I should give her a pass. But, man, she good.
A Blanchett pause.
Yeah, really.
I was thinking of her role in Hannah.
Yeah.
She's just ice cold in that. She's so evil in that. And yet she comes off as very, you know, professional and normal, but she's very, very cold in that. So that's the one that I was thinking of when casting her.
It's a good one.
Indeed.
It's a good pick.
Andy has the last pick here.
Well, I'm glad that you said ice cold as a really a nice segue for me, because I chose Tilda Swinton.
Nice.
Nice.
Awesome.
I was thinking about this over the last week. I really think Tilda Swinton is getting to the point where she can be in the same class that is defined by Meryl Streep, and that she is.
Yeah,
I'll agree.
She's fantastic at everything she does, and she's a chameleon. I mean, she can play. She's let me back up a little bit. The role that I was thinking for this role was her role as the White Witch in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which I think is really what Selena should have been. But she can play beautiful. She can play really weird. She can play this ice cold evil tyrant, all of those things that I think really would be elements that would make Selena a much more interesting character. And if you look at some of the recent movies that she's done, like The Grand Budapest Hotel, is it Snowpiercer?
I just saw that.
By the way, there was a great, I think it was a John Moe tweet about getting his snow pierced. Yeah.
I saw that.
But like, if you look at the pictures of her in those movies, she's almost unrecognizable. And I love that as aspect of her body of work, is that, to me, that really makes a good, like, that's a very interesting actor to me, as someone who truly looks like a different person in every single piece of work they're in. That's how I would describe Tilda Swinton. So there you are.
It's going to be very, very tough voting for this role.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Sorry, Faye Dunaway, but she blew you out of the water.
I think the closest comparison I can get to, and it seems rather off, is that if Prince kept making really good albums for years and years and years after Purple Rain, that would be Tilda Swinton.
That's an actress. I totally get what you're saying.
Like, total chameleon, super weird, but yet you totally buy it.
And
like,
so
kind
good.
Of a performance artist, but yet somehow not in a way that puts you off. Like, you're still like, all right, what's next, Swinton?
Yeah.
That's a
great
amazing.
Way to describe it. That really is. So I agree with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anytime. All right. So for the role of Selena, originally played by Faye Dunaway, and Jer went with Helena Bonham Carter. I went with Rachel Weisz. Mark went with Lena Headey. Lee went with Cate Blanchett. And Andy went with Tilda Swinton. And finally, in the major roles, that of Supergirl. Lee, tell us about Supergirl.
Originally played by Helen Slater, the Kryptonian cousin of Kal-El, Superman. Kara impulsively travels to Earth out of guilt for losing the Omega Hedron. In her quest to retrieve this power source, she battles an energy monster, a witch, the Phantom Zone, and the romantic advances of a love-struck Ethan.
Spoiler alert.
Yes. Surprisingly, this one wasn't too difficult for me to cast. There were a couple of actresses I thought of immediately, and I settled on someone who I thought had the athletic prowess to play a role like this. I don't think it's important that that Kara in our remake needs to be a kid. I think Helen Slater was 19 when she did this, but I don't think it's necessary for her to be a teenager. Just rather a young adult, maybe college age or something like that. So I went with Sienna Miller. She's one of my favorite actresses, and she has incredible range. And I always go back to Factory Girl whenever I think of her. Because that was one of the first movies I saw with her in a leading role. And she's got amazing range in that. And she certainly has the action chops, as demonstrated in, I think, the first G.I. Joe movie.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
She was the Baroness.
She was the Baroness, yep.
And I liked her in that, even though the movie was terrible.
Yeah.
Same here.
Yep.
So, I think she's incredible, and I thought she would be perfect as Supergirl.
She has a total of 6 movies either in post-production or filming right now.
Nice.
We may not be able to get her.
Yeah.
That's all right. We'll wait till 2016.
She'll still look as good, I'm sure.
Yeah, totally. How old is she? 1981.
32?
Yeah,
I could see that.
Yeah. So, yeah, she could easily play someone 10 years younger, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Mark, what do you got?
I picked an actress named Jemima West, and at first I thought her name was humorous because there's a similarly named brand of maple syrup in the U.S. And then I looked at some photos and watched a movie, and I no longer found anything humorous about her.
She's that boring, huh?
No, there's just that she's too awesome to make fun of because her name sounds like a maple syrup. Yeah, so the movie that I mentioned a little bit earlier, The Mortal Instruments, City of Bones, featured Jemima West as one of a group of demon hunters. And I had actually watched this film researching a different actress that I thought about casting as Supergirl, and Jemima West changed my mind.
That's a sign of a good actress right there.
Were you thinking of the girl that ended up in Snow White? I can't remember her name, but I'm just looking at a picture of the cast, and that's the other girl in there.
Yes. Yeah. There's another actress in this film. Actually, the lead in Mortal
Instruments. Yeah, Lily Collins.
Yep. I was thinking about her for Supergirl.
Got it.
But maybe a little bit shallow of me to focus on colors, but I think Supergirl is so iconically blonde and blue, it really limited my choice of actresses. But I have a lot of faith in Jemima West, also not just for her acting chops, but because she showed off a lot of badassness in Mortal Instruments, doing very, very cool things with swords and whips and killing lots and lots of demons. So I think that she could do similarly badass things as Supergirl.
Nice. Good pick.
Thank you.
I will have to check out that movie. Is that kind of a kidsy movie, or is it
That's a good question. This film, Mortal Instruments, City of Doom, is yet another film adaptation of a book series, a fantasy-ish book series.
Like young adult novel, yeah, kind of?
Except...
like Percy Jackson-y?
It's for older audiences than so many of this type of film that's come out recently. There is no bit of lightheartedness. It's fairly dark and very, very violent.
Okay.
So... Yeah, it's not quite in the same vein as the Percy Jacksons and Harry Potters of the world.
Gotcha. Cool. I'll check it out.
See that you do. Really quickly, and then vote for Jemima West for Supergirl.
Okay. We'll see what I can do.
Yeah. Okay. So, hey, Kyle, you're next.
Indeed. I mean, you know, Supergirl has some of that very iconic, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes. And I kind of had that in mind when I was thinking of some folks, and then I ended up going a little bit different direction. I wanted somebody that could capture both the badassness of Supergirl, or how badass I think she can be, or certainly should be as someone with super in their name, but also some of the naivete. Like, I like that she kind of comes to this world and is a little bit unaware of practices and culture. So I, you know, you kind of have to balance both of those things. And so I went with someone that has demonstrated that, specifically in Doctor Who, and that is Karen Gillan.
Nice.
She is a redhead, so she is not blonde. And I would like to keep that because I think that would be really fun, just to mix it up a little bit.
Although she was bald pretty recently.
Yeah, though she was bald very recently, yeah. And so she's done, you know, a decent amount of action in Doctor Who, but now she is one of the villains in Guardians of the Galaxy that is coming out this summer, which I'm super duper excited about. So, you know, she's got the action pedigree. She's silly, but can be very serious and can do both of those very well. And I think she can kick some serious ass. So I just seemed like she would be a really good fit for that. So
she looks like a badass in her in her stills from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, I was super psyched when I read she was cast as Nebula.
Yeah, when they did the I think it was the Comic-Con reveal, like she came out with hair that looks basically like her hair did in Doctor Who, and then partway through the panel she took it off and it was a wig and she was like completely bald. So that was, she was like, "Yep, I'm very committed to this role," because I think she's basically like blue in that movie, right?
Yep, yeah. Blue.
Yeah. Yep. So I think she would be fantastic.
That's a good pick.
Thanks. She's my favorite what's the term in Doctor Who?
Companion.
Companion. Thank you. Jeez. I think she's been my favorite companion of the reboot era. I haven't watched much of season 7. I've essentially just seen the stuff that she's in. So maybe there's someone else yet to come that I will like more, but I really, really like her a lot.
Yeah, she was my favorite companion, but then I started watching season 7 and, well, Clara changed my mind. She's just irresistible. Cool.
Nice. Oh, I can't wait to check that out then. I've been very slow about that. I need to pick it up. Andy, how about you? Who did you pick for Supergirl?
I was not so much bound by the blonde hair, blue spandex top, and red cardboard skirt look. I went with someone who I thought would be a little more convincing in an action role. I went with Natalie Portman. Perhaps you've heard of her.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, I have.
I was thinking, I think, a lot for this role. For some reason, V for Vendetta came to mind. With a little bit of Black Swan, because I want this role to be a lot darker. And I think that those two roles were pretty tough roles in terms of the character going through a lot of just kind of mental anguish and crises and things like that. So, and I think Natalie Portman has proven herself repeatedly as being a good actress. So I think she would do better. Natalie Portman.
I'm a little sad to say it, but she has not aged well for me as an actress. Ooh. Like, I loved her in The Professional. I enjoyed, you know, she was as good as she could be in the Star Wars movies. She was great in V for Vendetta. And yes, she was really good in Black Swan in a more dramatic role, but kind of her big budget stuff, like Thor especially, I've been pretty bored with.
So I will agree that Thor was kind of meh.
Yeah.
It was almost like a step backwards, or as if she was just like, you know what, I just want a fun kind of brainless role for a while.
Yeah,
but I agree.
She wasn't bad, but she just was uninteresting. I didn't really care about her very much, which you very much need to. Like, I wanted her to have the Kat Dennings role and Kat Dennings to have her role, because I found Kat Dennings infinitely more interesting in that movie.
I like that you said that she wanted to take a brainless role. So she took on the role of a quantum physicist in Thor.
Also, another reference that it's an oblique reference, but if you've ever seen Closer, that's another one where I think she, in the end, comes out of that movie as, I don't know, having been the most clever of the characters. I think it just added a depth that was unexpected when I watched that movie. And part of one of a long list of umbrages I had with this movie was that Supergirl was just as interesting as a, you know, panel of drywall. And I wanted her I wanted there to be more conflict. I wanted there to be more, you know, all the kind of the standard dynamics of a character. But I think that Natalie Portman has shown that she can do that. So there you are.
Cool. I dig it.
We'll take it.
Thank you. I'm done talking now. I'm done.
Okay.
I'm
going to go next.
I'm sorry. Next. Hey, Jerry.
Old segue wick strikes again.
Oh, man.
In 3, 2...
Pause a long time for effect. And Jer.
Well, I chose somebody that I have only sort of seen in things that I haven't really ever paid attention to, but she's always sort of there. And that is Vanessa Hudgens. You may know her from High School Musical, if you're Andy. She played Gabriella.
You're right.
She was also...
It's Glee, Jer. I watched Glee.
Oh, yeah.
Those are different things.
I know. I was surprised, too.
And then she was also in that very much lampooned movie that came out last year, Spring Breakers, or 2 years ago. She was in that with several other similar female actress / singers.
Several other clones.
Yes. And I think we talked about this on our last podcast too, and I feel really weird about bringing it up twice in a row, but she was Blondie in Sucker Punch and is kind of pretty badass in that movie, as is basically the entire movie, is just a bunch of badassness rolled into some weird dream of machine guns and swords and dragons and motorcycles and whatnot. In the things that I have seen her in, and like I said, the things I've seen her in are all sort of, I'm not really paying attention to them. They just happen to be there. And she seems engaging. She seems like she would be both badass, but also kind of like Andy said, that naivete and bring some well-roundedness to the role. So, and I know she's very much not blonde, but I think that makeup artists can do a lot of wonderful things these days.
This is true. Cool. Good pick. All right. So for Supergirl, Lee chose Sienna Miller. Mark chose Jemima West. I chose Karen Gillan. Andy chose Natalie Portman. And Jer chose Vanessa Hudgens. So that does it for the major characters. Now let's move on to the minor characters. The first of which is Jimmy Olsen. Jimmy Olsen plays a very important role in Supergirl, that being the obvious tie-in to the Superman universe. That way, even though the movie is called Supergirl, viewers could say, oh yeah, that guy knows Superman when they hear his name on screen. Other than that, he's pretty much pointless, save a weird romantic subplot with his boss's younger sister. It was originally played by Mark McClure. I pretty much had no idea who to pick for this. It's very much a throwaway role. He's just kind of there to, again, just have some sort of lineage, some sort of tie-in to the Superman movies. And I don't even know if it was the same actor from the Superman movies. I didn't. I didn't take that much time because I didn't care. so I decided to just go with somebody that I thought would be a nice present, somebody that looked like, you know, a little scrappy, but kind of doing his own thing.
JGL.
And that's Vincent. Not JGL, no. Vincent Kartheiser, who's a Minnesota boy. Saw him at the Guthrie here pretty recently. He's a good guy. He's in Mad Men. He's fairly well known. He just looked like a Jimmy Olsen to me. I don't know exactly what that means, but he looked like he could fit that role well. So, Vincent Kartheiser. Kartheiser?
He's definitely got a Jimmy Olsen vibe.
Yeah. Yep. He's just got kind of that, like, how you doing, boss? Like, I could see him saying that all the time.
And people calling him Scoop.
Yeah, totally. Totally. He looks like a scoop. Yep. Nailed it. Yep.
The best is in the movie when Jimmy Olsen and Lucy Lane are being hauled away You can hear him say, "Nobody messes with Jimmy Olsen."
And thereby saying the least threatening thing ever captured on film.
It's like, oh my God, that's hilarious.
Yeah. The implied exception was all the people that mess with Jimmy Olsen.
Yes.
No one has bothered to mess with Jimmy Olsen, is what he meant to say.
Not one time ever.
Maybe Jimmy Olsen thought that those were the magic words that always brought Superman around, because that's what always happened in the past.
We do have to say at the beginning of Supergirl, essentially to establish that Superman is not around so they wouldn't come in to save the day, they basically have a radio thing that, like, BT dubs, Superman's not here. He's visiting someplace a million miles away. So don't bother to pretend that he's going to be coming. It's like the most obvious plot device I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Thank God no criminals ever listen to the radio.
Thank God.
Now it's loot week here at Metropolis with Superman gone. Locks will be kept unlocked. Come on in. Yeah, that's neither here nor there. Who's up next? Lee. Lee, tell me about Lucy Lane and who you picked for Lucy.
Lucy Lane, originally played by Maureen Teefee. I don't know who that is other than this role. Lucy has many of her older sister Lois's traits, such as speaking her mind and trying to stop runaway heavy machinery. She quickly befriends Linda and becomes one of the people Supergirl chooses to fight for. This was kind of an interesting character. In terms of minor characters, it's probably one of the more interesting ones. It's interesting, I guess, that Lois Lane has a younger sister. It's interesting that she knows Clark Kent and she knows Superman doesn't know that they're the same person. But I went with my kind of fail-safe on this one, and I picked Alison Brie.
Nice.
Because she has the same kind of perkiness and, just the same kind of, I guess, energy that I would imagine Lucy Lane would be. And honestly, if we were recasting a Superman movie, I would recast Alison Brie as Lois Lane. So
I like that.
There you go.
Like, I haven't seen a lot of the really, like, aggressive go-get-em sort of character from her portrayals, but she could totally do it. I really like it.
She kind of had a little bit of that in Scream 4. Her character was, I believe, a publicist, and she was kind of a shark, I guess. She was a little bit meaner, but very showbiz-like. And I bought it. I mean, she did a good job with that. So.
Cool. Yeah, I totally buy that. Absolutely.
Nigel is apparently a long-lost ancestor of Severus Snape. He is also a math/computer science teacher at a quote-unquote prestigious girls' boarding school. And he's a warlock because, well, early 1980s computer science teacher.
Duh.
Duh. He was originally played by Peter Cook, who was more well-known for being the Mawedge guy from Princess Bride. This is, I think, where I started actually trying to put a little effort into my casting picks to be like, all right, we can make this better. We can do better. I chose Mark Strong. The name may not all that familiar, but you've definitely seen him in things, and he is a badass. He is, I think, if you think of evil British villain, he's probably in your top five. At least for me. He was, recently in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Green Lantern.
It sort of looks like if Ralph Fiennes and Stanley Tucci had a love child.
I was going to say he looks a lot like Stanley Tucci.
In a great way.
Did they not?
Not that I'm aware of. Yeah. He's got a serious presence.
Yeah, he's got just like, you could cut a diamond on that jawline and things like that. But he's very British, and he's got that kind of really deep baritone theatrical voice that when he chooses to, like, you could just kind of assume the persona and voice of a villain. So really that's what this character needed rather than the buffoonery of Twoov. So
you know, I gotta say that performance, like, he managed to chew more scenes than Faye Dunaway did, but I actually really liked him. It was terrible that I believed in. You know what I mean? Like, he was like, you know what? Screw this. I'm going for it. I'm going Masterpiece Theater on the bit. Like, he just went for that role. So I kind of like the original, in spite of how, you know, maligned the movie was around him. I think he was like, I'm going for it. So
the interpretation that I took from the original performance was of being an extra cast member in a Monty Python skit. That's the direction I took from Peter Cook. I really hope that's what he was going for. otherwise, I'm really sorry. That being said, Mark, tell us of Bianca.
Bianca is Selena's assistant, driver, and general companion. And while friendship and servitude are roles both clearly served by Bianca, it is unclear whether Selena pays her to sit around in 80s yuppieware not making tea. She was originally portrayed by Brenda Vaccaro. And to me, it's really weird that Bianca both drove Selena around and just kind of lounged around in her house, you know, drinking. I found it a really pointless role, and you know, other than to make the movie worse. And But I have a vision for Bianca, and I think it might run parallel to Andy's vision for Nigel. I'm thinking a role of an actual like assistant, but somebody who's very, very stern and cold and almost military-like. For those that have seen Warner Brothers animation versions of Lex Luthor, he has an assistant named Mercy Graves, and she's a total badass. I'm a big fan of hers, and I would like to do something similar with Bianca, so I needed somebody very, like, statuesque. And that actress for me is Bridget Moynihan.
Ooh, nice.
Thank you.
That's a good pick.
Yeah. I don't know if she's ever had a true leading role. I imagine that she looks too statuesque to be identifiable by most women. But she's had a lot of, like, secondary and tertiary sorts of roles, such as in Sex and the City, where she played Natasha, who is Big's ex-wife. In Serendipity, she plays the fiancé that eventually gets jilted by John Cusack's character. She's kind of all over the place. And yeah, I'd like to see her do this type of role where she's just cold and brutal and efficient. And I think she's up for it.
I think the Bianca role in the original was added to insert moments of levity at all the wrong times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems pretty tailored for that purpose. And woefully so.
Yeah, it didn't do well. That character did not do well.
Yeah, I agree.
Because someone was sitting around watching them tape and think, man, this is too dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Good pick.
Thank you. So let's move on to Jer, who's going to tell us about Zoltar.
Zoltar. He is Supergirl's slightly creepy, artistic older friend, who uses the immense powers of the Omegahedron to make Bob Ross-style paintings. Until, that is, he loses it and gets banished into the Phantom Zone, which looks like melted caramel.
Favorite zone.
Oh, it is beautiful. What's that going to be, Zoltar?
I think a tree.
A tree. What is a tree?
A lovely thing which grows on Earth.
Earth? You mean where my cousin went?
And where, one day soon, perhaps I might venture as well.
I don't believe you. How?
In that. Through there.
The binary chute, but you could never survive the pressure. It would destroy you.
That I can. Zip, zap, and I'm gone.
Zoltar. Zoltar. Zoltar.
Is that also the name of the machine from Big?
Yeah. I think that's Zoltar. But
That was Zoltar. I did win a costume contest going as the Zoltar machine to a Halloween party once.
I would
nice.
Have
little known fact. Zoltar was originally played by Peter O'Toole, presumably because
Unreal.
He was in some sort of financial trouble or lost a bet.
Or he owed the Selkinds a movie.
He owed the wrong people money. I don't know if he was attempting to bring some acting weight to the movie or why he found himself here, but I decided that we needed somebody of an equal caliber to play Zoltar in our remake, and so I chose Sir Ian McKellen.
Nice.
Wow. Shot the movie with that one.
Boom.
I have no doubt that he will say yes. He's already done Marvel. He's already done Tolkien. It's time to do DC.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I think nice. Peter O'Toole was the Sir Alec Guinness of this movie.
Yeah.
Is that what I said? Yep.
Nobody, like, you know, going into the movie, nobody knows what it's going to be at the end. And you think, oh, it's quirky science fiction movie. Let's jump on board with that.
Yep. That's exactly the comparison that I made. Yep.
Had this been the greatest superhero movie of all time, Peter O'Toole would be in interviews right now going, God, I hated that I was in that movie.
Except that he's dead.
Just like Alec Guinness did up until he died.
Yep.
All right, so that wraps it up for the minor character breakdown, and that does it for this first half of our discussion of Supergirl. If you would like to find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast or blog on the Math is Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net. You can go there to find show notes, including the IMD pages for all the actors, actresses, or movies discussed in this episode. And if you subscribe in a podcast client of some sort, those links should be there as well, except for iTunes, which apparently doesn't show links, which I don't get at all. But if you use iTunes, go to mathishard.net because there's a ton of links there that are really, really helpful and interesting. Boo iTunes. You can find us on the social media networks, Twitter and Facebook at username MathIsHardNet. Our next episode will be released on August 25th, where we will be discussing the plot and filmmaking changes we would make to Supergirl. So, gentlemen, up and away, we move on to part two. Thanks for hanging out. It's always a pleasure. And until the next time, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.